Welcome back. It's episode 112 of the Chaos Ball Podcast. It's been a minute. It's been a little while. The podcast is on the IL for a little bit. But we're back at a great time. Catching the Mariners at a perfect, perfect time to talk about them. I feel so back. Like, completely back. This is the Mariners team that I grew up watching. I feel very nostalgic to watch them start a game going like 0 for 10 with runners in scoring position. It's perfect. They're returning back to their primordial form of a baseball team. But I'm back. The computer was on the IL there for a little bit. It was giving me some fits. It might be time for me to get a new computer here soon. I'm working with some very old equipment here in this very, very professional podcast production that I've got going on. And then I was out of town, and then I was sick. Still a little sick, but I needed to get back to recording because it's been too long. Last time I talked about the team slipping into the danger zone, that was right when Bryce was going on the IL. Things were looking like regression was happening, and regression has only continued to happen for this team, not unsurprisingly, but it's been, you know, it's not been good. They're not in an amazing spot right now, but again, that's why I said they're back to their real, real fundamental Mariners baseball here. But the first thing I need to talk about is Dippin' Dots for a second. I was at a baseball game, as I'm one to be at, Saturday night. It was Angels Mariners. I'll get into that in a second. I got Dippin' Dots because when you're at a ball game, I think it's a rule that you have to get one of these items. You have to get a hot dog or a beer. Usually, you know, pair those together, or you have to get Dippin' Dots. I think those are my three. If I go to a baseball game and don't get one of those, send me to rehab. Like, I think that's bad news. I don't think I've ever been to a baseball game without getting one of those things. And I got Dippin' Dots at this game Saturday night. It was nice out. Game wasn't nice, but I was with my girlfriend. We both love Dippin' Dots. Who doesn't? I walk up, and there's a lovely lady at the Dippin' Dots stand. First of all, there's only two flavors of Dippin' Dots, which they've been doing recently. It's just cookies and cream and the rainbow, like, sherbet, I guess, flavor, which, that's a big change. I feel like when I was a kid, there was 4 to 5 flavors of Dippin' Dots. Like, I remember a cookies and cream, a chocolate, a, like, mint chocolate situation, and then like a rainbow sherbet or like something like that. I don't think I'm crazy to think that two flavors now is a downgrade, but I couldn't believe my eyes when she handed me a bag of Dippin' Dots, like a tall bag. I posted it on Twitter. They don't scoop it out of the bucket and put it into a cup and give you a spoon anymore. There's spoons provided, but they give you a bag of Dippin' Dots, pre-prepared, pre-portioned, paid out the ass, but that's, you know, you do that for anything at a ball game these days. I was like genuinely upset while eating the Dippin' Dots. The game, it was like the 7th inning, so it wasn't, the game was also pissing me off, but I, like, the bag was hard to open. Dipping the spoon into the bag and trying not to spill any of the dots when the spoon was exiting said bag was impossible. Like, I was spilling dots all over the place, losing valuable ice cream that I paid for. We're losing recipes. Like, that's awful. Genuinely. I'm still upset about it. And what's worse is I saw you can still get a helmet Dippin' Dots. So there's like the normal, there's a normal size, and there's a helmet, which is also what threw me off, because I was like, if there's no cups, the normal size is just like normal cup is just a bag. It's not a cup. I saw some children walking back to their seats so that I was eating their eating Dippin' Dots from the Dippin' Dots stand. If you get a helmet, which is $3 more, I think it was like $7 or $8. Ridiculous. But you get to take the helmet home. That's the whole thing. They just put the bag of Dippin' Dots into the helmet and hand you that. Like, and that made me sad, seeing these kids go back. They had to probably go back to their seats, open the bag, dump the Dippin' Dots into the helmet, and eat it like that. What have we come to? What is happening? I could not believe it. I was just standing there upset, eating my Dippin' Dots, watching the Mariners flail at the plate and lose to the Angels. I'm still upset. It makes me not want to get Dippin' Dots when I go back to a ball game again. And that is not something I've ever thought I would say. I will say the taste was still good. I don't think they've skimped on the flavor. The flavor is still there. I do wish there was more variety still than just two flavors. The flavors are still heat. But I genuinely was livid. And this woman was so nice. I couldn't be mad at her, but my mouth was open when she handed me the bags. Too bad. Like, it takes the joy out of Dippin' Dots. I want to imagine that she's back there dipping into the earth where they hold all of the Dippin' Dots because it's the ice cream of the future, and it's like the cheese caves that the United States has somewhere. I imagine we have strategic Dippin' Dots reserves that we're serving Dippin' Dots out of, and when you put it to me in a bag, that takes me out of the element there. I need, if you're listening, I need you to tell me if this is an Angel Stadium thing, because when I was down in Petco a couple weeks ago to watch the Mariners actually win two ball games in a row, I didn't get Dippin' Dots at those games. I was drinking a lot more beer and not getting Dippin' Dots, so I didn't get them down there to figure that out. Because not that I was thinking about that, but I need you to tell me, is this an Angel Stadium thing? Because if this isn't like a sweeping declaration of Dippin' Dots across the country, and it's like Angel Stadium is just doing this with Dippin' Dots, I'm going to write a letter to Artie Moreno and tell him he's ruining like children experiences at baseball games, plus me, but I don't matter as much. So we're done with Dippin' Dots. I could complain about that for a while. I was there Saturday night. Awful game. Terrible baseball game. Great start. Cal home run. Amazing start. Then everything crumbles, and they just don't get it back. Cal's the only one who really does anything. Chris Taylor torched him. Joe Adell hit two home runs. But worst of all, I thought Julio had shattered his ankle in front of my eyes. I was trying to explain to my girlfriend how unlikely that is, and how I never really see that much, because it had to be perfect. If Julio didn't steal third base at that moment, he would have been at home plate. He would have scored a run that was going through the hole. But instead, he breaks for third and then gets whacked by like a 98 mile an hour off the bat ground ball from Randy. And so he's out, and I think he's it's over. I think the season's over. I think his ankle and or tibia is broken because he like breaks down and has to get helped off the field. Then Leody Taveras comes in. And first action for him in center field, basically a routine fly ball coming in on it. And he was asleep out there. Breaks late, awful jump. Also not really effective way to get to the ball. And it drops right in front of him. And then obviously the shit with his little attempted jump catch, which I didn't see in real time because I was in right field. I couldn't see down by the wall. And then I saw the replay. It made me even more mad that he was in the game and Julio wasn't. Terrible. Awful game. Thank God Julio was in the lineup the next day, which is yesterday for you. And he looked fine. He looked healthy. He looked like he was running just fine. Sounds like it was just x-rays were negative. Thank God. If Julio had broken his ankle on that ball, on that play, during that part of the game where a run would have been helpful, I think I would have rushed on the field and committed seppuku at home plate in front of the 20 fans in attendance at Angel Stadium that night. Couldn't believe it. Thank God for George Kirby and him striking out 14 guys to salvage the series today, which is crazy. They had to salvage a series against the Angels after getting mopped up by the Orioles at home. Vibes are bad. And on the topic, before I get into the rest of the stuff, I don't think Dan Wilson is good at this. I just don't. I don't think that's a hot take. I think that is a prevailing opinion of Mariners fans at this point. I watched him leave Jackson Coar, who I don't think is great, or really honestly very good at all. I saw him leave Jackson Coar out there for 32 pitches on Saturday night after pitching, 18 the night before. This is Jackson Coar. And it was also like, I don't know if it was high leverage technically, but it was a close game in like the sixth and seventh inning. What are you doing? The lineup's too weak. Everyone's mad. He keeps putting Polanco second, even though he's been absolute ass since the calendar turned from April to May and now to June. Continual ass. I just don't think he's very good at managing a baseball team. Maybe he'll learn to be good. And I'm not even, it's crazy I'm even complaining about a manager and lineups, because I don't think they matter a whole lot. But it's crazy to have Cal Raleigh in your lineup and not put him at number two. That should be the first thing you put in there. I think throw him at leadoff. Screw it. Leadoff, JP second. Logically, that doesn't make sense, because JP gets on base like a 400 clip. But it'd be fun. Regardless, I don't know what the bit is with Polanco continuing to hit second. It like genuinely makes no logical sense to do that when you have better hitters behind him, like Cal in the four hole. It makes no sense. I have no idea why he keeps doing it. And every little bad thing about Dan reminds me more and more every time that they didn't do an interview process and they just flat out hired this dude straight up. No interim, no nothing. Just here. Here are the keys, buddy. Management experience, don't need it. Were you on the teams in the 90s? Yes. That is the checkbox on the interview process for Dan Wilson. Reminds me, I'm thinking about it every day now. It still makes no sense to me. It feels like a move the front office makes. And it feels like the front office made that move and just blew smoke up their own ass. And they were like, yeah, no, we know more than everyone else. We got a feeling Dan is going to be great. I think a lot of moves this front office makes is in an effort to look really smart, I think. I think that's a guiding principle of the DePoto regime top down is, yes, sure, we want to win baseball games. More importantly, we can be competitive and win enough games within the budget set to make the rich overlords happy. And we can all keep cash and checks in the front office. Perfect. But more importantly, we need to make moves that make us look smart. Because imagine if Dan Wilson was just the best manager ever. I mean, whatever. It just seems like a move that's, no, we know more than everyone else. We don't need to interview anyone. Dan, he's our guy. Edgar's there too now. He's our guy too. Ridiculous. But I'm done talking about that series. That whatever. We move on. Nothing good ever happens in Anaheim, really. I feel like I've seen them play some of the worst ball I've ever watched there since I moved down to that being the closest ballpark to me. It's been terrible. So we move on. We move on. Let's talk about Cal Raleigh for just a moment. It's broken containment, obviously, with what he's doing right now. Like, everyone is talking about him, writing articles about him. There's not much more to say about him right now that hasn't been said by everyone else because he deserves all of this praise. What he's doing is insane. Trying really hard not to take this for granted and appreciate it despite the team sucking around him, because he's kind of doing a, Felix, but for the offense. Like, I think someone said today on the internet, Sunday, his first day off of the year, first full day off of the year, because last time they tried to have a day off, they needed him to come in and pinch hit, save them. His first full day off, so didn't hit a home run. This is the first win that they had without him hitting a home run since May 19th, which says a lot about the team and him, because he keeps hitting home runs, and the team has been losing a lot. It's clear, like, obviously, it makes sense. It's unheard of, the start of the year that he's having for a catcher. It's preposterous for anyone. Like, you look at it right now, he is the second best qualified hitter in baseball, according to WRC Plus, with a 191. We're in June. He's caught so many games. Like, only Aaron Judge is above him, and Aaron Judge is, for lack of a better term, like Barry Bonds of this age, as close as you can get. So still a little ways off, but you get my point. It's preposterous what he's doing. He has 4.2 Fangraphs WAR, also second in the league behind Judge. He, up until today, played every single game of the year. He has 26 home runs. It is June 9th when this is coming out. That's ridiculous. He leads the league. More than Shohei Ohtani, more than Aaron Judge, more than Kyle Schwarber. He's on pace for damn near a 10 WAR F4 season as a catcher. This has never been done. There have only been a couple guys who have eclipsed 9. There have only been a handful of guys who have eclipsed 8 F4 as a catcher. He's going to have, knock on wood, without a doubt, hopefully, another 30 home run season, which is unheard of for a catcher to put together 3 straight years of 30 home runs, which he will. He had 27 in 2022 as well. The pace he's on right now is insane. He is on pace for like a 60-ish home run season with 15 stolen bases, playing like full-time catcher, which is probably going to end up being 130-ish plus games, 130-something, with some DHing here and there to make up for the rest of the games. Like, if he's healthy, and maybe, let's say, he gets another 1 or 2 days off, 159 games, let's say 30 of that is DH. Let's say 25. He catches a lot. It's insane what he's doing. So 26 home runs right now. That's a lot. That's a lot of home runs. Even if he cools off, which, I mean, it's 60 home runs is pretty unfathomable from a catcher. 60 home runs is stupid for anyone. For a catcher, I think it's damn near impossible. Like, I'll say it, I don't think he's going to hit 60 home runs. 50 would also be insane. 40 is insane for a catcher. Salvi set that record a few years ago in 2021, 48, for most as a primary catcher, and he destroyed the second half of that year, but he did a lot of his damage as a DH. He hit 33 as a catcher, which is a lot. And then you look down the line at the other great catchers who've had 40-plus home run seasons. Johnny Bench hit 45 in 1970, 38 as a catcher. And then the record as a catcher, Javi Lopez in 2003, hit 43 total home runs, 42 as a catcher. Todd Hundley, Roy Campanella, and Mike Piazza are the only other ones who've hit 40 as a catcher in a season. I'm not calling Salvi a fraud, I'm just saying he hit 15 as a DH, 48 playing as full-time catcher is insane. Cal's on pace to break that. But even just eclipsing 30 home runs again is insane. If he gets to 40, and he doesn't even have to really do much to get to 40. If he cools off, which he might, if he stops the pace he's currently on and just cruises the rest of the year for another, how many months of the season do we have? Four. If he just hits home runs at his normal pace that he has for his career, he's getting to 40 in August. Like, by September, he'd have 40. So 50 is in his sights. What sucks right now is, like, thinking about him winning MVP has me sweating. But Aaron Judge exists, and that's really what throws a damper on this. But you know how toxic I'm going to be if this is remotely close in, like, F4 and WRC Plus and home runs by the end of the season? I'm going to make up the most crazy value arguments of, like, everyday catcher. He is so much more valuable than a right fielder. Aaron Judge plays in a Little League ballpark. Kyle Raleigh plays in a ballpark that actively hurts him at the plate. He's squatting back there basically 5 days a week. What's Aaron Judge? It's standing in right field, picking flowers. Yeah, didn't think so. Kyle has 7 stolen bases. Aaron Judge has 5. I rest my case. I don't know what Kyle would have to do to win MVP. Like, Aaron Judge would have to get hurt. I don't want Aaron Judge to get hurt. I do enjoy watching a generational player like him play baseball. As it shakes out right now, Aaron Judge is going to put up like a 10 to 11 win season, which is preposterous. If Cal is like an 8-win catcher, there will be conversations to be had. Like, people will vote him one in MVP if that is the case. Like, I'm pretty confident in that. People will do it. There's the value part of that people will not use war necessarily, but say catcher is more valuable to a team. Like, he did all this and also manages a pitching staff. It'd help him if the pitching staff was better by the end of the year, which I hope it will be. But it's just, it's insane what he is doing. And I can't believe he has gotten better every year. And this year, the leap is insane. And it's the head start he's given himself. He could stop literally right now, and it would be a great season as a catcher in his 5th year in the big leagues, in his 4th full season at age 28, middle of basically his prime athletic years. He's about to eclipse his 2nd and 3rd best F4 seasons. Last year, he put up his best 5.4. on pace to basically get there by the All-Star break. He's special. And the fact that I was thinking about this, how many extra dollars does he get if he signs his extension right now? Like, I'm thinking he's getting 5 more million a year potentially. Because this is insane. Every day, he keeps just hitting home runs. The best part is he's just become a good hitter overall. He's just become a really good hitter. He still strikes out a good amount, like over 27%. But he's walking a ton this season, more than last year, which he's only ever increased his walk rate. It's increased every year. 4.7 to 9.2 to 9.5 to 11.1 to right now 13.9. He's hitting .272 this year with a .380 on base percentage, which are both like 50 to 60 points higher than his career norm. And it's not cheap. It's not cheap. His expected stats and everything basically back this up and say, yeah, he still strikes out a lot, but he's a very sound hitter. And it's evident in just watching the guy. Like, he's hitting tremendous, like, amazing home runs. But it's also just his ability now to just kind of dump a ball into the gap or just situationally lock in a 2-strike count with runners on and knock a guy in. He's just providing value in every facet of offensive play. And then swiping seven bags by June 8th. Because he's just built like that. He's just different. Already a career high in steals, which he set last year with six. It's sensational. This could end up being a season we all talk about in 50 years. And I hope the team goes along with it. I hope it's not, oh, and I wish they made the playoffs that year, like it was so much with Felix and even like Ichiro in those 2000 years. Like Robinson Cano, I guess you could say, put in there, him and those teams didn't make the playoffs. But I hope in 50 years I can say, yeah, no, Cal, when he had, you know, a top five season as a catcher in baseball history, yeah, the team also went to the ALCS or World Series or something. That would be sweet. I hope I can say that. I could talk about Cal forever. I just love him. I can, and he's here for a while, too. I am 384 isolated power. It's crazy. It's so ridiculous. And it's just, I'll keep talking about him. How he's done it, too, is just get better at everything, but especially he's not rested on his laurels of what he was already really good at. He's gone from a elite, like he pulls a lot of fly balls in the air and is really powerful. That's how he gets to his home runs. He's just doing it better than everyone else now. He's just like, no, I'm not going to stop improving that. So he's getting to even more pull fly balls in the air now. And what's more impressive is he's doing it from the right side even more. It's not even a conversation of him just being a full-time lefty anymore. He has improved from both sides of the plate, and he's brought up his right-handed hitting to, like, not as good as his lefty, but still great. Which is an insane thing to do when you're a catcher. Special. Just a special player. We're lucky to have him. But I have to move on. Salute to Cal. Again, he's really been the light in the darkness for the past month and some change here, and we thank him for it, and I hope he continues, and I hope he hits 60 home runs, 60-20 season from a catcher, and then he can he's walked into the Hall of Fame in 10 years after that. And then if he just coasts, ridiculous. Now, to completely change my tone, let's play a fun game of trace the Mariners' misfortunes back to a Jerry DePoto quote. As always, he had to open his mouth. He just had to do it. He had to do it when things were going well. And as he's wont to do, he talked on and on, patting himself on the back. You know, credit to the players, too. It's not like he doesn't credit the players and coaching staff and all that. He does. But he also pats himself on the back a little bit. And generally, as these things do with Jerry DePoto, it hasn't aged well. So we go back to May 8th of this season from a Seattle Times article where Jerry DePoto says, well, I'll quote this whole article, little paragraph here. Quote, "And that's why DePoto is optimistic this brand of offense is sustainable. This," he said, "is the most," quote, "complete position player group the Mariners have fielded during his 10 years leading baseball ops." Sure, buddy. When he said that quote, I had to think about it, because the first reaction is like laughing, like, oh, sure. But thinking about it, like, maybe it is the most complete position player group that he has put together in his 10 years, but that's not necessarily a compliment. Because he hasn't really been good at doing that. And this year, even when he said that, it's like, yeah, this team is still deeply flawed. But it might be the most complete position player group he's put together. That's the DePoto difference right there. You don't know if it's actually good or bad because of how low of a bar he set for himself position player-wise. On May 8th, they were 22-14. At time of that quote, first in the AL West with a three-game cushion, second best record in the American League. Since then, dramatic music, the Mariners have went 11-17 second in the AL West now, 2.5 games back of the Astros, who've been playing some good ball. And they have the 8th best record in the American League. And now what's great is they have a 0 run differential. It's at 0. The run differentials in the American League West are a joke. The division is so garbage. Just to compare like directly to last season as well, at this point in 2024, June 8th, when I was looking at those stats, June 8th, they were 36-30, up 5 games in the AL West. They had scored 251 runs and given up 246. Right now, again, they're 33-31, and they've scored and given up 282 runs. So they have scored more and given up more this year, and they're in a worse spot. Obviously, as well, in 2024, we know that was the time they were in the middle of giving up that 10-run division lead that they had. The teams are different for sure, but not that different. We're still at a point where like the expected win loss is essentially 500. It's literally 500 for this year's team, but different ways to get there, same outcome, basically. The offense has returned to what that 2024 team kind of looked like. The issue is that the pitching hasn't really returned to what that 2024 team looked like. And that 2024 team, we knew it was a little fraudulent. They were up 10 games. It was a little bit they've punched above their weight class. And the rest of the AL West, mainly the Astros and Rangers for that matter, had punched below their weight class. They hadn't played as well as they should have, and or their record didn't reflect how good they were. If we remember, it came crashing down so quickly. Like, the cushion was gone, what felt like immediately. This year, didn't give themselves that big cushion. So when we knew regression was coming, they were only a few games up in the AL West. They weren't 10 games. So now we're looking up in the division at the Astros, where when it was crashing down last year, there was a lot of time to continue to look down until it flipped, and then it never went back. This team, again, it doesn't look that different. They've come to the same outcome. It's largely the same group of players. There's been more injuries to the pitching staff. The offense was torching the ball in April, and some of it was sustainable. Some of it we knew wasn't. Since then, a lot of the guys have just come down to earth. I mean, this year, a lot of it, again, like the pitching hasn't returned to form that it was last year, partly because baseball is a little random. Can't just copy paste what this pitching staff is going to look like, even though it was the same group of guys. But then the injuries happen, you know, Kirby started the year on the IL. Then Logan got hurt. Bryce Miller was on the IL. He's off now, but he's still clearly hurt. Kirby, before the start, where he just struck out all of the Angels, had been very rusty, and now it's looking like he's actually ramped up to being, hopefully, in midseason form and healthy. It looked like that on Sunday. Logan's still hurt. But the pitching just hasn't been the same. And now we're in a tough spot with the offense being bad and the pitching still hurt. We knew the regression was coming. I mean, I think I said as much that it had to be happening, but it was in proper Mariners fashion. The regression was so much more falling off a cliff rather than rolling down a hill. The regression was always going to come from the bottom of the lineup first. Like, they seem to be conjuring up runs every game with dark magic in April. Like, your Leo Rivas, Ben Williamson, Mastrobioni, you know, etc. contingent at the bottom of the lineup. That is stopped. That's not shocking. But Polanco has gone from one of the best hitters in the league in April to a 7 WRC plus. Single digits from May 8th and for a month until now. 7. And it's not even a fluke. He's just not hitting the ball. He's not hitting it hard. he's not even striking out a lot. It's just like weak contact. He's lost everything. Those guys that were started off well, again, Williamson has been bad. Like, Rivas isn't on the team right now. He was in a weird spot, got kind of iced out. Right, Tellez still is, again, he's hit some home runs, has been kind of fun, but overall not a good hitter. The tough ones are Randy Rosarena and Dylan Moore, besides Jorge Polanco having almost a zero WRC plus since May 8th. Dylan Moore needs to not be 30% worse than league average if this team wants to do anything this year. And Randy also has been bad for a month. Like, he's been Randy bad, where I still think he's fine long term, but it's just been like there hasn't been enough power to justify how much whiff and strikeout he's had. He has stretches like this. He had this last year too, before he really turned it on at the start of the year. He was just a lot of whiff, a lot of strikeout, non-competitive at bats. I think he'll get back on track. It's just the team, while Cal has been raking and JP also has been raking, they've needed Randy to also do that. Like, Julio's also been a very soundly good offensive player. The walk rate has dipped from where it was, and that's also looking at not amazing barrel rates for him and like StatCast data, where if the walk rate is dipping again back to where the career has been, then we need it, his batted ball stuff, to at least be where his career has been, and that quite hasn't quite been it. So I'm not concerned. I still think Julio's not the problem of this team, but the hard hit rate barrel stuff this season have been lower, and we are taking that with a really increased walk rate. But now if the walk rate is not going to be there again, like I said, he needs to pick it back up a little bit. And Cal, I don't think, is going to have like damn near 200 WRC plus all season. So the looming specter of slight Cal regression might crater this team completely. They're out of a playoff spot right now, I think. Let me double check that, but I'm pretty sure they are. The AL is weak. The AL West is the weakest division in the American League. Yeah, the Mariners are a game and a half out of the wild card. It's not looking bleak yet, but like, Cole Young has come up, and he looked better this series against the Angels, but the problem with the prospects, all of them really, but especially those guys, Harry Ford, Cole Young, that were really close, we're not going to be saviors. It wasn't like you were promoting a Julio-y, you know, you weren't promoting a superstar, like Rome, you weren't promoting a Roman Anthony. You were promoting, like, maybe Cole Young is a good baseball player for the Seattle Mariners for the next decade, makes a couple all-star teams, holds down second base in an adequate manner. That would be a success for him. But he's not like a superstar. He's not a savior of this team. He's had a very slow start, like a lot of prospects. I think he's probably okay. But that's the issue, is the knight in shining armor to come in and be like an MVP type hitter is not coming from inside this org. Like, it could be Julio, you could say. I think Randy's just a good hitter. Theoretically, I guess, could be Julio, but that's the issue with how this team is built. Is, again, you don't have a Roman Anthony to promote. You have a Cole Young and Harry Ford who could be good, and that would be helpful. But you still need, once again, we've arrived back at the point where you need a big bopper in the lineup. It'd be nice if they just paid Pete Alonso like I wanted them to this offseason. That'd be sweet if they just did that. Wouldn't that be cool? Or if they just, like, paid Alex Bregman or something. He's hurt, but still, like, it's frustrating. It's gotten to the point, like, last season, with the exception of Cal hitting home run every game where the lineup, like, top down cannot hit when it counts. Like, despite JP and Julio being overall good offensive contributors in the last month, everyone, it seems like, can't hit when it counts. They are going back to the Mariners' classics of not hitting with runners in scoring position. It's been agonizing. Even worse, it's just that the pitching hasn't been superlative enough to support that. So they lose games. That they can't steal games like they did last year. Bullpen it's being a bullpen, I think. It's fluctuating. It's been basically league average by ERA. I think Munoz finally gave up some runs. When I was not watching, he imploded, and I wasn't watching, thankfully. I was at a wedding. But Matt Brash is back and looks good. Munoz is still good. Spire is still in there good. Like, they still have good relievers. It's the fringes of the bullpen that I think they're going to have to address at the deadline or sooner. But that, I don't think, is the biggest problem. It's really been the starting pitching injuries and the guys not going deep in the games. Like, the bullpen has been stretched more than usual, than you'd like from this pitching staff. And we're reaching the territory of moves needing to happen. Unless, like, the offense clicks again, I guess, while Kirby and Logan are getting back to business in the rotation here soon, hopefully both of them. Kirby right now, Logan, he's rehabbing still, but he's close. But even if the offense starts to click again, I can't have the front office not do anything and say, no, the offense is good. No, this offense might click again. That's baseball. It's still like the 5-9 of this offense is still so bad. It doesn't help that the biggest free agent acquisition hitting-wise for DePoto, Mitch Garver, has been awful. That is completely on them. I thought that it was obviously going to go better than this. But it's tough when they have a tight budget. DePoto wants to work in that budget. He says he can. And then the money they actually spend on guys doesn't work. Mitch Garver, terrible. Like, the couple million that they splurged on to acquire or pick up Leody Taveras, terrible. Awful. I think he's going to be DFA'd here soon. So it's hard to say if they had more money, the front office could cook more, because look at what they've spent the money on. Swill, for the most part. And then when they do spend good money on a pitcher, they trade them to San Francisco. And Robbie Ray's cooking now. I don't even resent that trade. It's just, it's like a little bit of salt in the wound for DePoto, I'm sure. It's not a great situation for them to be in. Like, it feels like we're beating a dead horse again and again with criticizing that this roster construction leaves so much to be desired, and we're seeing it exposed year after year in this DePoto era, where we're at a point where he can't keep using, like, excuses or, like, saying he's building for the future. The future is now. Like, right now is that future that he promised years ago of sustainable competition. You know, that 54% line. They're not even winning 54% right now. It's the, like, oh, yes, we're going to build a sustainable winner with guys who come up through the org. And we have yet to really see that. Like, they're falling flat on that promise again. Like, sure, things could turn around, but we're once again entering trade deadline season soon with basically the same goal or the same need in mind as the last couple of years, where this team offensively, and even they could definitely use a relief pitcher or two, but looking just at the offense here, they need more than they can feasibly acquire at the trade deadline, probably. Once again, we were at this point last year, and they got Randy, and I was like, yes, Randy, awesome, love it. Still love it. Still love that move to this day. They still need more. When potentially, again, this could have been addressed by paying Peter Alonso after the Mets said no, and then said, okay, you can come back later, actually, because no one else wants to pay you. And you can name so many free agents, but would they have made that decision would Pete Alonso be putting up an 80 WRC plus on the Mariners right now if they signed him? Maybe. Entirely possible. It's disingenuous to not mention that could have happened. That seems to happen. But it's we're at the point where I think I said it before the season that this is the season Jerry DePoto gets fired if they miss the playoffs. I think I left myself that little caveat, if they miss the playoffs. I should have just stood on my take and said he's going to get fired this year. This, I think, would be the year. Because you look at, if you want to be that team that builds, quote, sustainably, and doesn't spend big on players, but instead gets good value from trades and waiver pickups, they've proven they're not the best at doing that. And then, again, they've also proven they're not the best at player acquisition. So give them more money, and I don't think they'd be signing amazing, expensive free agents. So they're kind of stuck in this middle where they've extended guys, they've paid for them within, sure, but they're not the Brewers where they can really just squeeze, like the Brewers can squeeze every little drop of value from their roster and the decisions they make and the promotions they make. But then you're also not like the Dodgers, who kind of do both, or the Mets, who just throw a lot of money at teams. They're in this middle where they're not amazing at doing what Jerry DePoto has promised they're going to do, and they don't have stupid money to throw at good players constantly and throw it against the wall to see if it works out. Not saying the Mets or Dodgers are also bad at player dev. They might be better than the Mariners. But yeah, my point, they're in like no man's land as an organization, and you wonder. Yeah, you don't wonder. I just don't think Jerry DePoto is, and his organization is, good for the goal they want. Is good enough for the goal they want. This org is, they could be worse off without DePoto. There's good things that they have done. I've said it time and time again, but like just to compare them to the Brewers again, they're not the Brewers, and yet they kind of want to be the Brewers. They kind of want to be the Brewers with a little bit more money, which theoretically sounds great. In a hypothetical world, that's amazing. But when you keep, you know, trying stuff like picking up Leody Taveras and giving Mitch Garver a very reasonable contract, and it doesn't work out, stuff like that doesn't work out, there's not many more levers for him to press. And then we're left with this team with a lot of holes going into a trade deadline where there's plenty of prospects to be dealt, but I don't think there are simply not enough names to throw out there right now that would fill all the required holes in this roster for me to be happy after the trade deadline. So that's where we're at. Not a great situation, but we support the team. And we ride nonetheless. And I think I'm going to call it there because my voice is getting hoarser and hoarser and I'm still sick. I need to finish my tea and not think about the Mariners for the rest of the night. But thank you for listening again. I'll be back sooner than my last episode. I can guarantee that. My computer's actually working this time. I shouldn't be sick in the next few weeks. Let's hope they start playing better and the Mariners don't make me sick. But thank you for listening. If you have all this way, I appreciate it. And I'll leave you with a go, Mariners. Have a great rest of your week. Goodbye.